extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Everybody, welcome to Extra Time, a very special edition. We're going to preview all of your Leagues Cup kicking off coming up on Friday, July 21st. We've also got MessiCon to talk about as well. Lionel Messi finally presented as an Inter Miami player at Drive Pink Stadium on, what was it, Sunday night in the rain. It has been a hectic week, but I am excited about it. And of course, we've got the All-Star Game coming up. David Goss, Kalen Carr with you. We'll have John Arnold on for a large segment to help us preview the Leagues Cup. He covers Liga MX consistently over the last 10 plus years. He's lived in Mexico to cover that league. He has a fantastic newsletter about CONCACAF and everything going on in the region, which has been
taking notes furiously. I'm ready for this.
You should be, because you've now got to ingest the second league, which I think for a lot of fans here, you know, whether you're not a fan of a Liga MX team, and many MLS fans are fans of teams there as well. But I think for me and yourself, like, we all grew up, this was the big league that I grew up around, and watching games, friends that were fans of Pumas and, you know, Club America and Chivas and all these teams. And then now with CCL and the old version of Leagues Cup, like, we've interacted with a lot of these teams, but not all of them. That's what's cool about Leagues Cup, is it's going to be, what does the 14th place team in MLS look like against the 14th place team in Liga MX, which we've never seen before. And it's going to be fascinating. This is a tournament that I think is going to shift a lot in the world of the game, and it's all going to kick off on Friday. So we're going to get you fully previewed for that. We are going to do 4 minutes on every single group. But before we get there, we've got to talk about a guy who's won 7 Ballon d'Ors, is on the verge of winning his 8th, by the way, because he won the 2022 World Cup. That means he's a World Cup champion as well. He's won, like, I don't know, 19 Champions Leagues, a bunch of La Ligas, some French leagues as well. We are talking about Lionel Messi. He was officially unveiled as an Inter Miami player last night alongside Sergio Busquets. Classic Sergio, man. He's just there doing his job. He's not the star. You know, he's just working behind the scenes a little, comes out, kills it in English, in the full stadium, in front of a ton of people. Credit to him for doing the media hit and you're getting everyone fired up. And then Messi comes out to Little Baby. Was it Little Baby?
Yeah.
Didn't know Messi was a fan, but
someone said he requested that.
Yeah. I think we're going to learn a lot about Messi now, of, like, we didn't know where he liked to grocery shop. We didn't know what he was into. I think we're going to learn a whole lot more about him. What was your experience in watching this, and sort of now that it is official, in interacting with soccer fans from around the world, like, what's been your experience over the last 48 hours?
I mean, it was incredible. Honestly, it was, like, almost beyond belief to see him come out there. And, you know, we've kind of had this slow burn where you see the announcement, or the at least the initial
interview,
rumors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where he's mentioning Miami. And then next thing you know, it's the slow trickle of him getting a pub sub or just way too much cereal, which was awesome to see. But then to finally get it here. And, you know, the part for me was also the atmosphere around it, where you saw, yes, David Beckham. He was the head, he was the headline to start off, alongside the commissioner, of course, and Taylor and Kalen, who did a great job. But I just, you know, the idea that he was coming out there with Sergio Busquets in front of that crowd again with his whole family, the excitement of it all, just the pageantry, and then the passion of the fans to be there.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, to be in
to
that
wait through a rain delay
storm, which,
for a player announcement.
Everybody says, like, I guess that's just normal in Florida, but I was still, it would take a lot for me to be
still soaks your clothes through, whether you're used to it or not.
But that's the passion for it. And I think the idea that you're going to get to see, just this was like sort of the introduction, the beginning of what we're about to see take on this crazy parade across North America, kicking off just in a few days in Leagues Cup, is kind of the perfect point, jumping off point for a tournament that I think already had a lot of intrigue, like you're talking about. But now you add the greatest player of all time to the kickoff, literally, yeah, of the tournament, just takes it to the next level.
It's going to be a historical note that, like, Lionel Messi came to the U.S., played for Inter Miami, made his debut against Cruz Azul in the first ever Leagues Cup. It'll technically be the first match because it's an 8 p.m. Eastern time kick on Friday. So that'll be like the first kickoff. There are other ones simultaneous.
I also even think just with that group it's fitting to with Atlanta because we also have Thiago Almada, who is... Honestly, when he signed at the beginning of this year, I was like, whoa.
World Cup
like,
winners.
World Cup winners cut together. And, you know, this idea that we could have a player like that in Major League Soccer and then have, you know, really both of them. And then in the same group with Tata Martino going against his former club where he won a title with Atlanta United. That just adds.
Joseph as well.
Yeah, Joseph too. Yeah. So there's just so many storylines, especially with that group. But we're going to go through all of the storylines for sure.
We are going to go through all the group storylines. I agree with you, though, in that Messi signs and, you know, social media just lights up. And we've heard about it, and as you said, sort of a slow burn of like, it's happening, but it hasn't happened, and you're kind of waiting for it. And I think there's a way to digitally experience things of like ticket sales are through the roof. These are the prices of things, you know, sold out stadiums. Everyone's buying jerseys. Everyone's excited. But then to see people like waiting through a weather delay for an announcement, not for a game. And sell out that stadium. Like, of course, they're going to sell out every game. They're going to sell out every game in every stadium they play in. But it felt like I felt it in a different way of like, this is going to be electric.
Yeah.
This is going to be off the charts over the course of this time. I had a lot of different thoughts over the last few days of like, David Ruiz's life is about to change. Kamal Miller, Drake Callender. Like, Drake Callender was playing for a lower division Pac-12 team a few years ago.
Whoa. Yeah. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You mean the U.S. men's national team?
Yeah, true.
No, but that's he's going to have a big role to play, a lot of pressure. And I think sometimes for the players on Messi's team, you're going to see who can sink and who gets kind of crushed by the onslaught of attention, the pressure of playing with the greatest player ever, and some that are surely going to rise their game. Drake Callender has probably got a little more pressure on him based on the way this team is constructed as of right now and the pressure that's going to be placed on them. But look, if I were Inter Miami right now, I would literally just take the first part of the season and try and just forget it.
Right. And Leagues Cup is that perfect point to say, like, we're equal in the standings on Friday.
Whether it actually functions that way, we'll have to see. But you can just feel the energy. Even Stefano Fusaro was interviewing DeAndre Yedlin, who just came off a really disappointing loss, right?
Yeah.
Right. In St. Louis, did not go well for them. But the idea that, okay, if you can't get hope and energy based on what you saw from that fan base, from the community and from the world with eyes on you, I could see them really taking this opportunity and they got a couple days to do it.
Now, it's everything's different. And what's hard about this is like, there's no parallel, right? We're talking about Messi. We're also talking about an Inter Miami team that is last place. But when you watch Reynoso come back into Minnesota, and obviously there is a former connection there, so he knows that team. Or I was watching that Minnesota game this weekend and Vela scores his second goal of the week. And it's like, Vela is so good. He is so special. Now you talk about Messi.
I was going to say, are you comparing they're both.
I'm just trying to find. I'm just trying to find a way to say.
But that's the hard part. There is no comparison to what we're seeing.
So, but there's also no comparison to like how much Inter Miami has struggled for a team to turn around from where they are to get to the top. Messi coming into the team and Busquets could change things. Obviously, some potential moves as well. Rodolfo Pizarro has terminated his contract. I believe they announced him at IEK Athens in Greece as well. So more space and potentially coming forward to add even more players and under 22 players. We've heard all these rumors.
The one comp that you could kind of make is David Beckham coming to the Galaxy with the amount of attention that was around it. Although I didn't see anything like that I saw last night. No. The big difference between them for me is it took a bit for them to get to Bruce Arena to bring in a manager with that experience, with that winning pedigree. Tata. They've brought in Tata Martino. That's the lifeline, the way I look at it, that he's been there, he's done it, he's lifted the trophy, he knows Messi, he's the perfect bridge to try to get this team going in a quick way.
So let's talk about this opportunity coming up on Friday, starting July 21st, Leagues Cup, the first ever time that this is being played in this format. 47 clubs will participate. There will be 15 groups of three clubs to open up group stage play. The two reigning champions in LAFC and Pachuca from the Apertura in 2022, they get buys into the knockout stages. So the top two teams in every group, those two teams, they will start what is a round of 32 bracket and it will be single elimination from that point on all the way to a final. All of those will be home site hosts, and you can go look at Leagues Cup and MLSsoccer.com to sort of see what the different opportunities are of how you will host. One unique factor in this tournament, there will be no tie. So any game after 90 minutes that finished tied, you will go straight to penalty kicks. An additional point will be awarded to the winner and the standard 1 point to the loser. So 3 points for a win, 2 points for a shootout victory, 1 point for a shootout loss, which ends up being a normal
and
tie.
And it goes direct to penalties, yes. No extra time.
No. You play stoppage time, yes. But no extra time. This right here.
This is all
this
you
is
get.
Extra time. Yeah. Well, no, I was talking about our podcast.
Yeah, that's
the name.
Yeah.
Of our show. Kaylin, I'm curious, outside of Inter Miami, I think of some of the clubs like a Sporting Kansas City, like a Minnesota, maybe like a Chicago Fire or a TFC, where the year hasn't gone the way they'd like, but they've played better soccer recently or they've gotten healthy. How does a tournament now coming in, how do you either shift your mindset? Do you move your focus there? Do you feel relief or is it a little bit too much? Like how does, you've had Open Cup in the past or, you know, CCLs, which are midweek, so that's different a little bit, but like what's the feeling as a player of like, oh, here's this other opportunity?
Well, the big difference now is the season stops. So while you have to make tough decisions for managers or players or, you know, even just this within the spirit of a group of where do you put your resources, where do you put your effort, where do you put your energy, and where do you take risks? Here, because the season has stopped, every team should be putting everything in, pushing all chips in. And that's the exciting part to me. That now it comes at a little bit of a different time where generally we see in CONCACAF Champions League, the Mexican teams are coming in better form in the middle of their season, whereas MLS teams are in preseason. That's put us at a big disadvantage. Now it's kind of the opposite in the sense where Liga MX is just starting their season. I think they've played 3 matches so far to begin, but still in flux. A lot of teams have changed their managers, have brought in new players, the transfer window. That's happening within Major League Soccer too. So there are groups that are going to try to implement new players or find a pathway back to it. But it's different for every team. But I think the teams for me that have the experience of playing in these formats and doing well in the past, I think of a Seattle, I think of a, let's see, Orlando even.
RSL going to a Western Conference Finals 2 years ago.
Yeah, some of those clubs, LAFC, Philly, like the clubs that have that experience in Champions League or in the MLS Cup playoffs that have had success so far, even in Open Cup. I think those are the teams that I would still bank on understanding how to maneuver these types of groups where you're going through. This is a different format again with the World Cup style format. As we mentioned, that the way it's going to be settled in penalty kicks, which would actually put even more pressure on goalkeepers and goalkeeper play. So, but it adds an interesting wrinkle. And I think in some ways for me, still MLS has more to prove. I think we're still the league that needs to continue to take these opportunities to measure yourself. And I think this is a much better platform where you're going to actually get the best out of these teams. And then it's up to how you handle it on the pitch.
You mentioned for these Liga MX squads, the Apertura just started. So every team has played 3 games. The transfer window is still open. And the Gold Cup just finished with, of course, Mexico making it to the final. But Panama has players that play in Liga MX as well. Of course, the U.S., Maria would like me to mention, winning the final at the end of that. So this is a chaotic time, as you mentioned, for a lot of the Liga MX clubs, similar to what MLS teams have experienced in CCL. We'll see how that sort of weighs things in this one. Let's talk groups for a moment, and then we'll dig in with John Arnold. I put down what I thought were the 4 toughest groups. I want to know which you think is the toughest group or which one you're most excited for. So we've got 2 in the Central. We've got FC Cincinnati, who are first in Major League Soccer right now. Supporters Shield leader Chivas, one of the biggest clubs in Mexico. They finished and made it to the final at the last tournament, the Clausura, and then Sporting Kansas City, who have gotten healthy and started to turn things around. You've got Central Group 1 with St. Louis, Club America, and Columbus. So the best team in the West, the biggest team in Mexico, and a Columbus team under Wilfred Nance, who does have history in knockout tournaments and great lower.com field atmosphere and all of that. And a reminder, these groups were sort of set based off the last season's standing. So any team that's overperforming, that's where you start to see why these groups feel so much tougher. And then out West, we've got a group with Seattle, Monterrey, who are number 1 in the league. last year in the regular season. RSL, who are third now in an Open Cup semi. Seattle, of course, being Seattle. And then there's a Tigres, Portland, San Jose group, which the Timbers are going to host both of their games at home at Providence Park in front of that crowd. And then an upstart San Jose team against Tigres. Which of those is the toughest group?
To summarize, you've got two from the West and two Central.
Yeah,
no East.
As an East Coast guy, yeah.
Surprising from you guys. Yes. I'm going to go with...
Red Bulls 2 were in this. They're not.
West 2 for me. Seattle, Monterrey, RSL. You talked about Monterrey and, you know, the strength of that team. Spent a lot of money.
Yes.
Have a ton of firepower. Seattle, I picked them to win this tournament.
Ooh.
I was put on the spot, but I'm sticking with it. I think partly because the way they approach it, I think just Seattle overall seems to be the team, the club. Always, they were going for Open Cups when nobody was really too interested, except for my Chicago Fire. Very proud of that and my Open Cup title there. But, you know, I just think that they want to be the first always. They want to set the tone, and they're getting healthy. They've gotten guys back from the Gold Cup. Roldan, Jordan Morris.
And they went to the final of the previous edition of Leagues Cup because, like you said, they take everything seriously and they have depth.
Yeah, and so I think Schmetzer is going to have some tougher decisions to make as far as what is his best lineup. And those are good questions to ask. So, and then RSL, as you mentioned, a team that's based on seeding, you know, is in this group. But if you look at based on form and the team that's, it's not even the same team.
They might be favorites now.
Yeah. Arango has experience in Liga MX, although it was a quick trip back to, he went to Pachuca and then came back to RSL between being at LAFC, winning the title just last season there. So I just think that team is always, we've seen Pablo Mascherini in the playoffs, how he gets the best out of his group. I think it's always been a really tough out always, but now they have that top end talent that I think separates them. So I would go with that. I do think there's some other ones. I like the Chivas group with Cincinnati.
To me, it's SBC. One of those two central groups.
Also, Panovich having experience playing in MLS and coaching in MLS.
And Pulido leading the line in his form against Chivas and Casey being healthy. Yeah, RSL, you're right. RSL is a different monster of, like, if they were the quote unquote third team in this group coming into the year, they are now incredible, where SKC are still that third group, but they're healthy. But that's where I lean on St. Louis America and Columbus. Because not only do you have the quality, you've got the environments.
Yeah.
And then you've got the styles of, like, Club America. They are the most possession team in Mexico right now. They dominate games because they are Club. Like, it doesn't matter who they play, they're going to dominate in on the ball. Now you bring St. Louis into that, which is a whole different beast. And then you throw Columbus in on top, where Wilfred Nancy is like, no, I don't even need center backs. Like, I'm going to play how I'm going to play. All three of those games could be unbelievable. And that, to me, is, like, exciting for this tournament.
The first match, when the schedule came out, the first one I circled was St. Louis hosting America.
Yeah.
Expansion team against, you know, the most storied big club in Liga MX. And then Columbus has the history with the Dos Aceros, the histories between the national teams. You mentioned many different entry points into this tournament. And then, the contrasting styles, the way they play. So all the pressure, I think, in some ways goes on the America team just based on that pedigree. So that's an interesting wrinkle, because it's like, if you lose to St. Louis, what happens in the media? What happens in the press? What happens to the manager? Like, all those different wrinkles. And then, you know, St. Louis is an expansion team, but also has so much history within American soccer. So to be hosting that game has real significance and feels just like, you know, one you couldn't even dream of.
For St. Louis to host a team like Club America and it not be a friendly with two foreign teams playing each other, right? Yeah. Like, this was the point. You now have your own local club that can bring this experience and bring this fan base and this quality to your city and not have it just be, can we find two teams to put this on? Like, this is your home team. It's going to be awesome. If you think you know what's going to happen, if you think you know what's going on, the Leagues Cup Bracket Challenge is now live. You get the chance to predict the round-by-round winners of the brand new tournament for a shot at the grand prize of $10,000. You can make your picks anytime before the group stage begins on July 21st. Learn more at leaguescup.com/bracket challenge. Now we are ready to break it all down. 15 groups to dig into across Leagues Cup. And who else to do it with than the man, the myth, the Conca legend? I couldn't even figure out a way to get CONCACAF in there, but I tried. Of course you know him from CONCACAF, the newsletter. Of course you know him from this show. You'll see him on the Leagues Cup website as well. John Arnold, how else could I possibly intro you?
You could get the name in my newsletter right, Gus. It's Getting CONCACAF, so I hope people check it out. But, other than the disrespect, I'm glad to be here.
I got stuck because the CONCACAF-inated thing was, like, my favorite thing ever when you drink a coffee and talk about CONCACAF. So I kind of got stuck halfway in between. Maybe I was trying to will it back into existence.
Stay tuned. There might be some Leagues Cup coffee crossover content. Wow.
A little sprinkle, a little breaking news. We got the Tom Bogert going here without Tommy Scoops on the show. John, we are excited to dig into all of this. Me and Kalen have already been talking about it for a bit. But from your point of view, you live down in Mexico. You've covered Liga MX. You obviously live in Dallas. You've covered MLS for years. What is your feeling about this tournament, about what's about to happen over the next month?
I think it's something that is going to be really intriguing to watch how it all comes together. This being sort of the full launch of the tournament after a couple smaller additions, I think it's just going to bring everyone in. Maybe it does take a couple additions for people to wrap their heads around what's being attempted here, because I think it is ambitious. It's different. It's something that kind of stands out in the world of soccer. But I also think it's the type of swing that, with both these leagues taking it, could result in something that's really fun for fans, really great for the leagues, and ultimately something that the players, coaches, and us who go to the stadium really enjoy.
All right, John, are you ready for the full ETR experience?
You know I'm ready, man. I think I've been on ETR a little bit before, but this is our just like Leafs Cup is ambitious, this is our most ambitious.
So we're going to have Maria take the role of producing Anders. She has a timer set. 4 minutes for each group. We have 15 groups, as you know, from west to central to south to east. We, of course, are going to start in the west because we are West Coast bias, as always, here at Extra Time, based on the West Coast, the Bay Area. We love everything about the West Coast, the redwood trees, all that type of stuff. Then we are going to move through all the groups. John is going to be our Liga MX expert. Kalen is going to be our MLS expert. And then if there are any former MLS Next Academy players, I'll talk about them, or Matthew Schwanier. Otherwise, I'll keep my mouth shut over the course of this. So we're going to set the stage on each group and then dig into these teams and how we see this all playing out for, as John said, what is fairly unprecedented. And we're going to learn a whole lot and look probably like idiots in about a week or so, which is quicker than normal on our predictions, which is just like more fulfilling and more rewarding. So let's dig in, and we start with the big one. We start in the West with group one. So every single group, three teams. So obviously one team has to host two games and one team will host one game. Otherwise, then changing up as we get through with some groups that have multiple Liga MX teams. But we will get into it as we go along. In this group, the Portland Timbers, San Jose Earthquakes, and the reigning tournament champions in Mexico, Tigres. The Portland Timbers will host two games. So they will host San Jose and Tigres, and then San Jose will host against Tigres in the final match of this one. Let's get started with Tigres here, John. Should everyone know about this team?
I think people should know that they are the reigning champion, but it was a tumultuous tournament for Tigres to get there. They didn't finish well in the regular season. They had three managers leading the way and ultimately caught fire at the right time in the playoffs, as I think a lot of people sort of expected Tigres to be able to do. You know, I think that they have kind of established themselves as a team that can do that. And they've got a lot of familiar faces for MLS fans, some new guys as well. So you look at this squad, you say, man, this is a really good team. They won the championship, but they might not be this kind of super team that maybe everyone expects.
You mentioned some familiar names. We know Andre Pierre Gignac will be in the building, returned from injury, scored a goal this weekend. Who else is on that list? And how good are all of these players still?
Yeah, I mean, Gignac still leads the line. I think you could say that Tigres have these sort of reliable veteran bookends. Gignac's up top. Nahuel Guzman is at the back, a goalkeeper who can make some really remarkable saves, loves to have a bit of an adventure, play with his feet, come out. He's also the kind of guy who, you know, when you talk about an international tournament, sometimes you see those style clashes or, you know, time wasting that makes people so mad. Now, well, is a guy who's going to get under your skin. So I think when you look at Tigres, those are kind of the two names that you probably have to start with. There's some more familiar faces as well. But there's also some rising stars. Sebastian Cordova was a massive, massive key for Tigres to win the title. just caught fire, started scoring goals. He's injured. We don't know exactly how much of League's Cup he's going to be able to play. But if he's on the field, he's going to be one to watch as well. And Diego Lainez, a signing that Tigres brought back to Mexico after an unsuccessful European adventure. A guy who both at the club and country level is being used as sort of a super sub. But I think that's a fair description. I do think that when he comes into games, he's able to change them, and he's going to be pushing for a starting role as well. So a lot of players on this Tigres team that really can cause problems.
So Lainez, we're just talking about a big name, a big acquisition. He's a bench player. This is a loaded Tigres team, as John set the stage. Kalen, let's zoom out and look at this group then. San Jose and Portland. Can either of these teams hang with Tigres?
I think it'll be tough. I would pick Tigres to go through as the favorites. And so it really starts to circle on that matchup between these two. They played once earlier in the season. It was 0-0. So I think going to be a tight one. This is where it starts to kick into saying, okay, well, if it's a draw, this is where maybe it comes down to a penalty shootout to see who goes through as that second group. The other thing I'm just excited about for this one as well is a big part of the intrigue of this tournament for me is sometimes the venues.
Yeah.
And two of the ones that I circled, St. Louis and America, and that's in St. Louis, obviously. And then here, Portland hosting Tigres for me, that's going to be a huge one as far as, you know, one, we're going to get exposed more to the Liga MX teams, but I think for those audiences to get a peek behind the window of like what the atmospheres are like here, and there's nowhere better for me than Portland.
I agree with you. It's going to be awesome to watch Tigres, a massive team, be on that stage. And that's sort of what's fun about this is start to mix a couple different ingredients around, and we're about to find out what we get. And for San Jose, I think there's a big competition for Luchi Gonzalez. First really knockout competition. They struggled early in Open Cup. So for them to sort of show that they can play at this stage, getting Cade Cowell back, getting Jackson,
they're a playoff team for sure. And I think this is where you can use this as an opportunity to really try and have some playoff experience before you get into the playoffs. And I think for Portland, things starting to click a little bit in that last home game, beating Columbus, 3-2, Bully getting in behind Dairon, you know, in knockout playoff formats, time, League's Cup, Dairon.
Dairon's
hype for that.
All right, so Maria hits us with the timer, our first timer. These are going to be tight 4 minutes. There's a lot to talk about in these groups. Let's move on to West Group number 2. This is a delicious one, maybe the best group in the tournament. RSL, currently sitting in third place in an Open Cup semifinal. They host two of the games, then Seattle hosts Monterrey in the final match. So RSL, Seattle, and Monterrey. John, this Monterrey team, they were top of the table in the last tournament that most recently finished. What's the big storyline around this team?
Well, the big storyline is that they've got a new manager, and he's a guy who Liga MX fans know well, Tano Ortiz, who was managing Club America. He leaves after America doesn't lift the trophy and then pops up, a couple hours north leading Rayados, a team that has a big budget, a team that wants to compete for titles, just like Tigres, just like America. So how Ortiz kind of injects a bit of personality to a team that I think was kind of ruthless in a almost boring way last year. What can he give that will kind of change things up, give teams a little bit of confusion, you know, those moments of we don't know what to expect from this team, I think could make Rayados an even more dangerous team than the one that topped the regular season table last time around.
Classic Pecky, Jesse Mars situation, successful, they don't like it. He gets let go, and now it's Ortiz's opportunity to try and put the show on for Monterrey. Of course, Tigres just won the title, so a lot of pressure there for Monterrey to try and keep up. Kalen, we also have an RSL team in this group, 13-3-7 across all comps since April 8th. Shout out to Trey for putting that one out there. Now they add Chicho Arango as well as some other teams, some other big players, but this is a tough group. What should RSL with two home games be expecting?
I think they can expect to go through. I think they've been that good, especially when you think of the form that they've been in as of late, running into the tournament. And then I think Arango is the piece for me, as you mentioned, that really gives them that top end talent that they haven't had in past tournaments or playoffs where you haven't had that striker. You've had to survive or go on the road. They've done it by committee, but now they have that central focus piece. And it's an interesting story because Arango went to Pachuca, sold from LAFC for, I think, $6 million, and then comes back just 6 months later. I think he scored 5 goals in his 11 appearances for Pachuca. So he's scoring goals there, but I think wanted to come back to MLS, gets to RSL. It was a surprise that they would be the club that would land him, went out and spent the big money. So I think the idea that they would now have a striker like that to go into a tournament like this with all the other pieces too. Now that sort of by committee part starts to be, you know, in the better, it's actually a compliment at this point, because you have that number nine who's going to lead the line in front.
John, we haven't even talked about Seattle in all of this. They won the CCL last year. They've been one of the, you know, point setters for MLS over the course of all competitions. This group, how do you see this play out with Monterrey now thrown in?
I think it's a fantastic group. You know, we've seen the Sounders even have success in Leagues Cup. We saw the Sounders win CONCACAF Champions League. This is a team that knows and understands what it means to play internationally. But you also, again, have a Rayados team that has a guy like Rogelio Funes Mori up top, Hector Moreno at center back. You know, we can do, you know, names that everyone's going to recognize because it's a powerful team. So I'm really, really intrigued by this group in a lot of ways. I think, you know, this is, you have the Mexican power team, you have the American power team, and then you have the American up-and-comers, because RSL has been on such a hot streak. To me, that's why you have Leagues Cup groups, and that's why this is going to be one that we're absolutely circling.
All right, I'm not going to make you guys do this every time, but everyone pick the two that go through in this one.
John, I'm going to put you on the spot first, man. I need a minute. This is a tough group.
I like Rayados and RSL.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, which feels wild to say.
I can't take RSL. I'm going to let go Rayados and Seattle. I actually have I've picked Seattle to win Leagues Cup. I just feel like this is a team that has done it against Mexican competition. They understand what this is. Also, they took I think they're going to take it very seriously. Yes. They're getting healthy.
And they by the way, always do in every competition.
They want to be the first to win everything, right? That's part of what the identity of this club is. And they have the know-how. They have the experience. And I think they're getting healthy. So if they can get through this group, which I think they will, it's a tough one. But I got to go with Seattle because I've picked them to go all
I was going to say, always bold to pick a tournament winner out of the toughest group, where it's like they could win the whole thing or not get out of
There's
the group.
There's a couple other tough groups.
There are some big ones that we're about to get to in just a moment, especially in the Central. Let's stick in the West here, though, as Maria hits the timer across my head. You guys are lucky. You don't have to hear that. Not that you don't sound great, Maria. It's just, you know, lots of timers. West number three, LA Galaxy hosting two games against León and Vancouver. LA Galaxy, of course, in a little bit of better form. Vancouver's been on a hot streak. León, sixth place in the most recent tournament, lost in the play-in in the Clausura. They obviously won the CCL here, John. What should fans know about León?
I think the big thing to know is that it's a team that's capable of winning international competitions. They won the CCL. They'll be familiar and comfortable with being in Los Angeles. Can they do it in Carson as well? We'll have to see. It's a team that I think does a good job of blending familiar faces to León fans, guys who have been there for many years, with some acquisitions from South America, some acquisitions from within Mexico, and builds a team that really does contend for the title almost every single year. This year they win the international hardware, so it's an impressive, impressive team.
The big conversation when they went to the CCL final was around Nicolas Larcamón as one of the up-and-coming managers. What makes him great? What's this guy's future?
Larcamón was a manager who came to Mexico as total unknown with Puebla and then had really great seasons and came over to León, was kind of wooed over. He prepares for games extremely, extremely well. He's one of those managers who, you know, weeks later can tell you the name of the potential right back, you know, substitution if someone would have gone out in this game. Really cerebral guy, reads the game well, I think usually makes the right changes and has the depth at his disposal to where he can change a game as the second half gets going on. So I think he's a manager who has a really bright future, maybe within Mexico, maybe even beyond.
Potentially with national team as well, as that's an opening for Mexico, although coming off that Gold Cup victory. Kalen, we saw Vancouver this weekend beat the LA Galaxy at home. LA Galaxy will host Vancouver in this group, but those are still the two teams sort of rematching. Do you think this group comes down to that game of who gets out if León as CCL winners, we assume, is one of the favorites?
Yeah, I think that one's a pretty clear one to mark down. I like Larcamón and what he's done with his team. And you think about the way the Vancouver and the Galaxy match up, you know, that game ended up looking a little bit closer, the scoreline, than it was. They were up 3 goals.
Vancouver was up 3 and a man.
Yeah. And it was a really nice goal from Brugman to bring them back. But I just think the way that they play that Christmas tree formation really starves space from the middle of the pitch, which is the strength of the Galaxy. And then those moments in transition, they get Brian White out in there, balls in the box with Gressel being in the team. So I just think that the matchup doesn't suit the Galaxy well. And then on top of that, some of the injuries that they've had, Mark Delgado goes down in scoring a goal, which was a strange one. So we'll have to TBD on a few players as far as who's healthy for the Galaxy.
Yeah, we don't know that one. I would say both these teams, when we look at what they've done in competition in Vancouver and Lyon, I think they're both really bad matchups for this Galaxy team, because what we saw in that Vancouver Galaxy game is LA Galaxy will leave gaps, and Vancouver were direct, they were efficient, and then they defend with numbers. Lyon, very similar to what we saw in the CCL and what we've seen already. They lost 1-0 to Tigres this weekend. But again, compact. They're going to hit you in transition. The Galaxy have no way to stop that. Even if they want to, they do not have the personnel to close the game down. So to me, it feels like even though the Galaxy have 2 of the home games, that they're going to be one to struggle in this group. And remember, Vancouver played in CCL this year, so they have a little experience. They've won back-to-back Canadian championships. Anything I'm missing in this group that stands out to you guys?
I think you got it.
Boom. Nailed it. What a group. So that is West number 3. That is our final group in the West. We now move to what we're all so excited about, the Central. Of course, when you're talking soccer, you're always talking the Midwest. Kansas City native or Kansas City heritage? John Arnold.
Born in Topeka, the capital of Kansas.
God, I forgot that that was even a place. Let's go then find to your countryside. Let's go to Central number 1. Columbus, St. Louis, and America. Columbus hosts St. Louis, then St. Louis hosts America, like you talked about, that atmosphere. And then Columbus, of course, hosts America to close things out. Club America, one of the biggest names in the world, the biggest name in the region. They were 2nd last year. They lost in the semifinal to Toluca. 13 titles, number 1 all time. John, it's been an interesting run, though. They have not won a title in 4 years. Another new manager this season in Andre Jardine. What's the status of this club?
Well, you talk about how big this club is, how many fans they have all over the world, how many titles they have to their name, and even how good they've been recently. And that makes it all the more embarrassing for America that when they called trying to replace Dano Ortiz's manager, many people put the phone down and they said, I'm not interested. We think that Greg Berhalter was interested, but he ended up going with the U.S. national team rather than Club America, a job that, yes, I think has less pressure because the spotlight is always on America in Mexico City and beyond. Jardine is really stepping into the spotlight. I don't think we know what to expect. And I think in a way the pressure is on even more because they have made moves this offseason, most notably, I think signing Julian Quiñones from Atlas. They also brought in Kevin Alvarez, the right back from Pachuca. So look, like the two biggest needs for the team, they've tried to fix.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work out, it's going to be the guy in the manager box that gets blamed.
Greg Berhalter, when they said, do you want to coach America, that he thought they were talking about the USA. That was the issue there. You guys thought that was so hilarious. I agree. Talk a little bit about Julian Quiñones, though, because that is one of the big signings.
You know, you talk about your stretch with MLS Next Pro and calling these guys who make it out. I saw him play as a U-20 at Tigres when I was living in Tijuana, and I thought, this guy's going to make it. Now, I said that about 20 other players who didn't make it. But this was the one that actually worked out. He's just an attacker who really works well with another forward, a player who can, you know, create for himself, but I think is really good playing off of a player who's a little less mobile than he is. He's the guy who can get into these spots, start these 1-2 movements that so often end up with him on goal, can come inside out if they want to play him wide. But I think he'll be mostly playing in the center. Who knows when Henry Martin gets back from Gold Cup, if they kind of have a 1-2 punch. Zendejas is going to get back from Gold Cup. The options are really there for Andre Jardine. So I come back to this thought that when you look at the America squad, there's not a huge gap in midfield. They have Fidalgo, the Spain import, who's one of the best two-way players in the Americas, I would say. At defense, they brought in reinforcements. And at goal, maybe is the question mark without Guillermo Ochoa, but it's just a really strong roster. if things don't go right on the field, especially against teams that we know in MLS are quite good, but the average Mexico Liga MX fan might not understand what Columbus have done historically, what St. Louis have done this year. This could be a tournament that's a bit treacherous for Jack.
Kalen, because I had John go through big players on America, we took the full 4 minutes. But this group, as well as the one coming up in another one of the central groups, these are the ones where we're saying coming into this, like in our meeting, that's what's delicious about this tournament is great teams with different styles, completely different, you know, cultures around them facing off on one stage, like John just talked about. Like this, I mean, America at St. Louis, year one, America at lower.com feel like this feels like what this tournament's about.
Yeah, but it'll be interesting to see what Jardine does because he's facing two completely different styles. And does he decide to go and say, hey, we're America, we're going to play our style, you adapt to us? Or does he say, okay, we're going to St. Louis, that's a very different task than playing against a possession base of Wilfred Nancy's team? So I think part of that is interesting as far as how much, you know, are they really game planning? Who adjusts, who holds firm onto their style of play? And you know that St. Louis and Columbus aren't going to change. So I think
the question mark
is more on Jardine, and does Club America come in and say, hey, we're going to play through everything. There's nothing to stop us. Good luck, St. Louis. And then you really see, you know, especially with that crowd at St. Louis. I don't know. I think things an upset like that would be, especially for a club that has the pedigree and a brand new expansion team that might not really feel any pressure coming into this. It feels like the pressure is much more weighted towards America to not lose against these MLS teams.
These are going to be must-watch games, as all of them are. Of course, they are all available to you on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV, but man, this group's going to be phenomenal. Central 2 group, we've got Minnesota hosting two of the matches against Chicago and Puebla, and then Chicago, of course, hosting Puebla in the group finale. We talked earlier with Leon about Nicholas Larcamont, the up-and-coming manager who originally was at Puebla, as you said, then moved on. Eduardo Arce has taken over for him. Is he the next big young manager star?
He hasn't done anything to indicate he is quite yet. Since Larcamon left, there also were a couple other key players from Puebla that were sold to various different teams, some to America, some to Toluca, just bigger clubs within Liga MX. I think you sort of could sort of put Puebla in the same box as some of the MLS teams that we know as quote-unquote selling clubs. I haven't seen it from Arce, so I think this could be an interesting moment for him to try and convince fans in a short form tournament with just 1 month with the group together and defined, maybe they can get some results. But so far, it definitely feels like the magic left when Larcamon went out the door.
Is there anyone on the field that you are excited or fans should be excited to watch with this group?
Mexico Youth International Angel Robles is kind of being given the opportunity to be Puebla's lead playmaker, I suppose you'd say. Starting to get a lot more minutes with the first team is a guy who I think could bring a little bit of excitement, a little bit of dynamism to Puebla's game. And it's something that I think they need is, you know, especially if they're going to have this plan of kind of keeping on with selling players, he's a guy who could be one of the next ones to go.
So sort of off the back of that, Kalen, this Puebla team, maybe not a giant. You look at Chicago in really good form, won 4 of their last 5. Minnesota with Reynoso coming back. Do you sort of target any of these three teams as ones that could win this whole thing?
I would say if I were to bank on one right now and maybe it, as a surprise or a sleeper, it would be Minnesota.
Okay.
I think just with the additions they've made, getting Reynoso back, now having a couple of matches under his belt, you see the form, the way that they've been able to play with him, and then adding Timo Pukki as well, finally giving that finisher. Longwane as well now plays a little bit more of a third option, which is probably better for him, and that starts to create some triangles.
Missed the big chance at the end of the LAFC
he did
game.
That was
he's,
I mean,
he's in form.
I mean, look, he's gonna miss chances, but he's going to continue to get them and threaten. I think he has 6 on the season so far, so he's been very productive. I think more than anything, it's just been that too much has been placed on his shoulder so far this season. The one thing I do question them a little bit is as they get more confident in advance, do they get stretched?
Yeah,
and that's where I could see them getting into trouble against a Puebla or, you know, against a Chicago, where you start leaving spaces in behind or you'd leave spaces out wide, and that's where I could see them having some trouble. But if I were to pick a sleeper, I feel like Minnesota's better than where they are so far on the table.
And across this competition, Reynoso will be the best player on the field against every team maybe outside of a Tigres, but against every team in MLS and Liga MX, he's that good. It gives this team that chance that they could, as you said, make a run. We saw what they did in the playoffs in 2020 of maybe against the ball a little bit. They're comfortable. They're able to go and get results and build on it. Both Chicago and Minnesota feel like teams where the regular season is not going to pan out the way they thought it could coming into this year. So Leagues Cup, an opportunity to sort of revitalize your fan base, revitalize your team internally and say like, oh, we went to a quarterfinal. We went to a semifinal, play some big games. Of course, your former teammate, Cuauhtemoc Blanco, finished at Puebla. Former Chicago Fire legend, so that's going to be the clash of the Quas, whatever we're going to call it. Kalen will be out there, of course, wearing his old jersey, I believe.
I've got some good stories of going with him to Mexico, and you want to talk about the Club America fandom?
Yeah.
I saw some of the craziest fans. We weren't even playing America. We were playing like Necaxa and Chivas, and there would be America fans everywhere. It was insane.
How perfect is that, though? Because our next group features Chivas. We go to the central third group, and this might be the best group in the tournament. I've said it four times already, but this might be the truth. FC Cincinnati, Sporting Kansas City, and Chivas. So FC Cincinnati hosting the first two games, starting with Kansas City, and then the final game, Chivas will travel to SKC to finish things out. Chivas finishing third in the previous tournament. They made it all the way to the Clausura final, though. Of course, they are one of the giants of Mexico, 12 championships, second all time behind Club America. But this is, I think, the most fascinating team in this group because of the way they're supported in the U.S., because of their history, and because they're led by former MLSer Veljko Panovic, who's done fairly well, John.
I would say better than fairly well. You know, he gets to the final in the first tournament. They were not that far off from winning the whole thing. And that's despite the fact that all season there were a lot of injury issues for Chivas. This is a club that only signs Mexican players. So when you talk about an injury crisis, unlike a lot of other teams with resources, with fans, they can't just go buy another player. They have to find a Mexican player. So I don't know, getting this team to the finals, I think, shows his tactical acumen, shows how comfortable he is with putting some young players in difficult positions and hoping they succeed. And that's really happened even at the start of this year as well. He does have one of those new players in the mix, Eric Gutierrez, played in the Netherlands for several years after basically being Chucky Lozano's running buddy at Pachuca. He's now in the fold at Chivas, and I think they're expecting big things from him in the midfield. Borja Guzman, a player who's been quite critical as well and has generally been able to stay healthy. But a lot of moving parts for this Chivas team that Pauno's been able to put together, so they're getting results.
Reminder, Pauno, before taking over Chicago, won the U-20 World Cup with Serbia, another sort of upstart, but he has success in tournaments. That's where he has sort of found his, you know, calling as a coach.
Part of the challenge, too, for the Liga MX teams is that, you know, their season's just beginning, right, but they have gotten off to a perfect start so far this season, too. So at least as far as that, it's hard to read too much into it, but talking about where they left off last season, they've come back and had a really good start to this one.
John, we talked about this. We debated this a little bit before you came on. Is this the best group?
I feel like, just like you, David, every single group is the best group. I really am excited about a lot of these.
You love all your children.
Exactly. It's hard to pick your favorite. I don't know, man. It's up there, right? But that's the thing, is like, legitimately, there's so many great groups. There's so many things to watch in these little three-team pods. And then I think there's going to be great scenes.
Yeah,
that the atmosphere. Chivas clash is a really special thing, right? Yeah. I think that's going to be something where it's just going to feel different. And, you know, again, I'm not sure the average Chivas fan in Mexico or even in the U.S. understands what Cincinnati has built on field and off. They're about to find out.
You talk about Pulido, former Chivas center forward, healthy, leading the line for KC. I think KC is a team that I circle saying they're not only going to try and win this thing, but this might be their best chance to win a trophy this year. With the way their health has gone, the fact that everyone's healthy right now, you don't expect that to happen with the way some of these players are. It's like, we have to take advantage. They've improved somewhat. Kinda's come back into the team. Eric Tommy looks good. It looks like Shallowy and Russell now have found their form playing off Pulido. Like, this is a huge chance for KC, and yet they're in a group with the losing champions of the previous tournament in Mexico and the Supporters Shield leaders. That's as tough as it can get for that team. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. This one's going to be fascinating. Let's finish out the Central with the fourth group, Nashville.
We're not going to hit Cincy at all.
What do you want to say?
Well, I just, they're the number one team in MLS right now. So the big question for me real quick is just, how are they going to approach this? Because when you're going for the supporter shield and they've already been through Open Cup, they still have that in the semifinal waiting ahead of them. How do they balance kind of the decisions that they have to make as far as how much do you put into this? But I think with Bupenza coming in, it does give them more of an emphasis on integrating him. We already saw him get a goal in his debut. Looked offside to me, but we're cool either way. I mean, so just a perfect start for him. And I think, you know, just how good they've been at TQL, that just continues forward. So, yeah, it's one of those where I was questioning how they're going to approach it with just everything else they have going on. But they've been so good at home that I feel like they just kind of carry that momentum forward.
Murray, I want it to be noted, I was direct on time. And then Kalen's the reason we went
over. Number one.
So when the end of the show ends 1 minute long, it was Kalen's FC Cincinnati rant. But shout out to FC Cincinnati. They deserve the convo. I mean, can they be the first team to ever win the quad? Is that what it be? Open Cup, Supporter Shield, MLS Cup, and then Leagues Cup. Could they be the first quad winner in MLS history? It's worth the time. I agree with you. Let's finish now. Can I go there?
Yep, I'm ready.
With Central number four, Nashville, hosting the first two games against the Colorado Rapids and then Toluca. And then Colorado, of course, hosting the final game against Toluca. John, let's dig in about Toluca. It's a name we kind of always hear. Not really in finals, though, winning things. What is this club?
Toluca is a team with a great history, a well-supported team within the state of Mexico, where they're based, within obviously Toluca, which they're named after. A team that I think is, you know, making some smart moves with Nacho Ambriz as the manager, and a team that historically has won several titles. Fans consider themselves potentially another grande. There's four grandes in Mexico. They want to be in that conversation. The teams that are grandes will say, get out of here, little brother. There's no way. But they do have success to their name. And I think, again, a tournament like this is an opportunity for Toluca to try and keep kind of establishing that brand as, you know, you're saying, hey, maybe they're not winners. They could knock that sort of label off with a good run.
Fourth last year in the – or last tournament in the Clausura. Our Pumas supporter producer Maria vomited in the control room while you called Toluca a grande. So now we've got to deal with that coming up in just a moment. But, Kalen, you hear about Toluca and it sort of feels a bit like Nashville, which is like every time it feels like they enter the convo of like respect this team. They're a favorite. They do something like they just are in the current form. I've lost 5 of 6.
Yeah, well, picked them. I picked them to go to MLS Cup last year.
You picked
year.
Them to win every.
I picked them to win every year, partly because I love Honey. Defensively, they have all the makings of a team to do well in knockout tournaments. Defensively, they're one of the strongest teams in MLS. The system, it's simple. Everyone knows their role. They're strong in the middle of the field, and then they have a match winner in Hany Mukhtar. So that's a pretty good formula. It just hasn't worked. And the problem for me is the time of where they're at right now in the season. They have, I believe, winless, lost 5 of their last 6. Mm-hmm. And Hany Mukhtar hasn't scored in 6. And that's not a coincidence. The fact that those two are so heavily linked. The good news or the good reports that are coming out.
Talk to me about Sammy.
Is that they're talking about bringing in a striker. We have Sam Surridge from Nottingham Forest, 24 years old. So big striker, fits the profile.
24-year-old, not the important part. 6'3".
Yeah, there you go.
A target lad.
Looks mobile as well from what I've seen. So it's still reports at this point. But when you look at what Cincinnati are doing, bring in Bupenza, that number 9 designated player position, and the fact that just they hit a lull. This team has lost confidence. So for me, this Leagues Cup is a chance to kind of clean the slate, say, we're moving on to Leagues Cup. Let's push forward. Let's get our confidence back. Playing at home, they've got both of their matches at home here. And I think if you look at the way the group lines up with Colorado in it, they should be expected to go through.
It's going to be interesting with teams like players like Surridge, where they're coming off their offseason. And they're new to the team. Like, how hard do you push them in must-win games? You don't often put a player. Even we saw what happened with Gareth Bale last year for LAFC of like pushing for supporter shield. Okay, you're not going to throw that player into the highest intensity games immediately for 80, 90 minutes. So it'll be interesting on both sides because, as we said, only 3 games into that Patuta on the Liga MX side, still new to the season for a lot of these teams. How hard can you push players in this competition for the Colorado Rapids? their big advantage. Normally altitude, Toluca plays at pretty high altitude in Mexico, so that goes away a little bit. It'll be fascinating to see what happens in that final match. There goes the Central, arguably the best groups in the tournament. We finished out West. Let's move down South. We go to John's native Texas for one of only two groups that feature one MLS team and two Liga MX teams. We start with South number one. It is Austin FC, Mazatlan, and Juarez. Austin FC, of course, will host all of the games at Q2 Stadium. When you look at Mazatlan and Juarez, John, it's two of the three worst teams from the Clausura. What's the story with these two clubs?
I think that they have more in common than just a bad tournament last year. Both of these teams are relatively new to the first division and have just seen a lot of transition. I think there's expectation when a club comes into a new place or a new market that it's maybe going to be easier than it looks or easier than it actually is. It's been tough for these teams. And I think that when you look at Monarcas moving to Mazatlan, the pandemic hitting, it's been difficult to get momentum there. Juarez buying a spot basically in the first division and trying to kind of attract fans across the border like Xolos did during their heyday, not necessarily having success with some of the big names they brought in. Tuca Ferretti, the manager, had a rough spell there. Ultimately, I think each of these teams are trying to find an identity much more than kind of social media branding that a new club knows how to do.
I was going through the window and seeing some of the new pieces that were brought over to Juarez. One that stood out to me, Bofo Saucedo, a player we would know well from his time in Major League Soccer with Real Salt Lake. What do you think about that addition and how he can help Juarez?
Yeah, he had a great game over the weekend against Toluca. And I think as a player who is comfortable in Liga MX, you know, he played at Pumas, Toluca, and now in Juarez. And giving that responsibility, I think, is a nice kind of opportunity for him. This is the tournament where it's another nice opportunity. You know, a player who's familiar with the U.S. Came up here, I think has an opportunity to be someone that everyone's kind of paying attention to and that he could really, you know, steal the stage a little bit, especially considering how good he started the season, how good Juarez has started the season. It's been a nice opening to this new campaign.
Juarez knocking off Club America, I believe, already, right?
Yes, although you would have to kind of condition it with that America doesn't have their Gold Cup players in. Juarez is almost complete. You know, I think when there's going to be some results where you look back and say, that was a little funky, but something to build on, no doubt. And that's what these teams need. Both Juarez and Mazatlan need some sort of success to kind of lead to more success, I think.
John just crawling.
Take the 3 points.
He's like, get out of here.
Forget
Listen,
the context.
Y'all, Barcenas, of course, with Mazatlan. Any team that has a Panamanian player, I'm like in on now. So they're favorites in the tournament. Let's talk about the favorites in the group, though, Kaylin, which has been tough for Austin. Massive favorites in CCL. They fall to a Haitian club that had not played a competitive match in over 200 days just a couple months ago. They've sort of found their feet over the last few weeks. How do they handle being favorites and being the home team and have the expectations in the group stage?
Well, one of the, you know, downfalls of this Austin team, especially during that CCL run, was the center back position. The amount of injuries that they had and the way they weren't able to adjust, and now getting Cascante back hasn't really been discussed a ton, but him coming back, I think, gives them a little bit more solid base to be able to play from. And then getting Drewsi going, his form, Fagundes, such an important piece. Now Giassi got a goal in his last one. So it seems like they're starting to click. I, you know, sometimes it's not so difficult to think about when it's just, oh, your number 10 is healthy. He's back in the team. That can help. We've seen it with Reynoso. We've seen it across Major League Soccer. So, yeah, I think they're in a better position here than they were and probably learned some hard lessons from that CCL that you'd like to see them maybe carry forward here, especially not having to go on the road and playing all those matches at home.
Right. They did win their home CCL game. It just was too little too late with the way things went. Only 8-hour and 45-minute drive between Juarez and Austin. So I'm saying let's go on the road trip, everyone. We'll meet you down there, John. You live in Texas. It's all the same, right? Everything's next to each other.
Yeah, I mean, we are the size of France, but we don't have the high-speed rail network, so it's easy to get around.
Most people walk and bike in Texas. There's and public transit. There's very little driving, so it sounds like a good place for me. Kaylin would fit in.
When I moved there, I waited in line behind a car at an ATM machine, so that should tell you where I was at.
He's the Dynamo legend, Kaylin Carr, getting comfortable in Texas. Let's stick in the South here with Group 2. Orlando hosts your Houston Dynamo in the first game. Then Houston will host Santos Laguna, the third team in this group. And then we will finish with Orlando hosting Santos.
Speaking of Houston,
that final game.
This matchup made me think back to playing against Santos Laguna in the CCL quarterfinal. I believe in 2013, I believe Herc Gomez scored against
us. Darwin Quintero on that?
I think Aribe Peralta got one against us too. So that there's some history there between those two teams.
What was the score of that game? Did you lose 5-1?
No, it wasn't. It was not, and it wasn't that bad.
Okay.
But we did lose. But hey, Herc was, that was Herc's era against MLS teams. But yeah, I think that game does intrigue me because I think that one is in Houston, mm-hmm. and that makes me remember a number of games. The other game was in Mexico, but playing away, and so I think the crowd there is going to be interesting, which is another interesting dynamic of Houston. You might think, okay, well, you're going to Orlando, that's going to be difficult, but then you get to play at home. Well, being a home team doesn't always equate to that. I remember playing against Olympia and all the Honduran fans came out. It's actually really fun to play in that type of environment. It adds this extra layer to the competition. But I think Houston's going to have to try to go out in this first one and get a result of some sort against this Orlando team who's coming in confident after going and beating Atlanta United, but haven't really had the same home form that we've seen from them in the past. I was impressed by how they did early in the season in CCL going head-to-head against Tigres, and we've seen them in Open Cup winning the Open Cup with Pareja, his team. So I think they have a way through in knockout tournaments. I like this Orlando team. I think they already proved a lot so far this season.
And Pareja, of course, coached down Cholos down in Liga MX over the last few years. John, though, that Santos Laguna team, like I think a lot of MLS fans think of them as the Uribe, Darwin Quintero, CCL-winning teams. Where does this club stand right now? What's the big storyline?
Yeah, I would say there's a lot of great names that have come through Santos. Maybe there will be some great names again. But right now, it seems like the team is in a bit of a transitional moment. You know, there's not some of those big names. They were active in the offseason, bringing Pedro Aquino to sort of shore up the midfield from America, signing Duván Vergara to play on the wing. But they've needed those reinforcements. It's a team that I think for a long time depended on its academy and one or two, you know, other players on top. Some of those players worked out but have left. Others, because of the partnership and the ownership they share with Atlas, have moved on to Atlas or elsewhere. So I think it's a Santos team that, as Kalen says, is super well supported, especially in Texas. I think I'll have some in-laws who are probably headed to that game. But I think it might be a challenging tournament for them, especially because I think Oscar Pareja has something to prove in this kind of tournament where, you know, he had that spell at Cholos. It didn't go well, but he didn't get a lot of time, didn't get a lot of support. So I think it's going to be a difficult group for Los Guerreros.
Everything Pareja has done at Orlando has changed the history of the club, made the first playoffs, won the first playoff game, MLS's back final, and then Open Cup championship. Yet it's a club with so little success.
I love that you drew out the MLS's back final too.
but there's so little success that it's at the same time, it's so thin of like they've only won one playoff game. So it will be interesting in a tournament like this. I think Pareja, he built a team in the offseason that's ready to win now, but it is inconsistent. If he can sort of find that grit that he often leans on with his team of like us against the world, let's battle.
Are you ready for Duncan Maguire Leagues Cup version?
Dunk in Maguire. It's going to be fun. Facundo Torres, Martin Ojeda at this level. It's going to be, I think this is one of the more even groups where it could go any way. Two of the three teams could go through and we would not be surprised. So a lot of different storylines in that group.
Quick one, Carrasquilla back, but I want to ask about Hector Herrera and the perception. Do you know if their Liga MX fans, I'm sure, had a lot to say when he came to play in MLS and chose Houston Dynamo? Do you think that adds an interesting dynamic at all for Houston?
I think for Herrera, it certainly does, right? Because, you know, before Mexico's Gold Cup game in Houston, he's not on the roster and he's saying, you know, I wish these people who turned up for El Tri for so many years would turn up to the stadium. I think he probably has something to prove. And, you know, certainly I would say maybe in the same way that MLS fans view Liga MX fans don't tune in every week necessarily to MLS. Obviously, they listen to Extra Time, but I think it's a showcase opportunity for him to say, look, I am in good form. I have been playing well. It's going to be, you know, a massive opportunity for him to sort of convince, I think, the fan that maybe has left him behind.
Weeby would never have allowed this to happen. So I want that to be acknowledged.
I had, hey, Leagues Cup, we don't talk about Hector Herrera.
I agree with you, except we're about to talk about a superstar player on another team as we go to the third group in the South. It is a team called Inter Miami, who will host the first two games, although technically as an away team, in one of them against Cruz Azul. That one coming up on Friday night, July 21st, 8 p.m. Eastern time. It will be the debut of Lionel Messi and Sergio Busquets. And then Atlanta finishes the group by hosting Cruz Azul in the last game. So Atlanta playing at Miami in the second game and then hosting Cruz Azul. John, let's start with Cruz Azul. Let's get Los Cementeros out of the way and then we'll go into MessiCon. What should people know about this Mexico City side?
Well, it is a grande. It's a historic team that has a massive fan base. They had a long, long title drought that they ended during the pandemic, unfortunately. So it wasn't kind of as boisterous, the celebrations, as you would have liked to see from winning a first title since 1997. Since then, they kind of slipped back into old ways. Tuca Ferretti at the helm trying to reverse things, but it's not going amazingly. They had some big signings in the offseason. Carlos Salcedo, who you know, remember from RSL, maybe from Toronto FC, if you're a real sicko, is on the back line. He had a good tournament with Juarez and moved to Mexico City. So some reinvention going on for sure for Cruz Azul.
You were in Miami. You are in Miami right now for the big moment. What was MessiCon like? What was the experience?
Well, instead of MessiCon, I've been saying Messi Mania. I'm a man of culture. I have attended a WrestleMania before, and it was like that. You see what's happening, and then they show on the screen, up next, this is what's going to happen. And you're like, oh my gosh, it's Busquets. Oh my gosh, it's Messi. Oh my gosh, it's one of my favorite musical artists. It was a good show. You know, I think very few people could fill a stadium.
Wait, who was the musical artist? Because that part didn't make it on air.
It was Camilo.
Camilo was there.
Was Maluma there?
Was there a lot of different artists. There I forget, Tiago.
Now you're throwing John off.
No, sorry. I didn't mean to throw you off.
He did a track with Bizarrap, who I was wondering if he would show up. Wow. Maybe Friday we'll see Visa. You know, he's a big soccer fan. So we'll see. But I think everyone who's anyone in Miami is going to be there in Fort Lauderdale at Drive Pink Stadium on Friday. You can just feel the excitement. You really can. Everyone's stoked.
We've talked about it from sort of the U.S. point of view, from the American point of view, from the Canadian point of view, from the MLS point of view. I know you work for a ton of sources or outlets around the world. I know you're often contacted to be guests. Have you sort of heard from people outside the MLS sphere about what they think about Messi coming?
100%. And even, you know, I'm not getting requests because last night the world's media was there. You know, I was sitting next to some reporters from the Catalan channel that's still tracking him from the Barcelona days. So many Argentine press, so many Spanish press, so many people from Mexico, Central America. I mean, look, to be honest, you show up to an MLS game, usually you're used to being one or two, three reporters. The line to get into the press area was around the corner. And it's because everyone in the world wants to see what Messi will do, how he's going to do in MLS. And I think sort of, in a way, how he's going to live. You know, those moments of him leaving the restaurant, him going to the grocery store. We didn't see that in Paris. We didn't see that in Barcelona. And I think it's going to be interesting to watch this mesh of this reputation that MLS has had for players being able to come over and live sort of an anonymous life. I talked to a fan last night who said, Messi's not going to be anonymous here. But he can be more relaxed. He can do more things than he was used to. And I think that sort of story is a really interesting one. And then you get into what's going to happen on the field. And I think it's even more compelling. So, you know, it was awesome last night. It was great to see Messi wearing the jersey, to see his family looking happy, looking excited. And, you know, I think the notable thing is that the way Lionel Messi is that the thing that stood out most to me that he said was, I can't wait to get on the training field. I have the desire, he said, to be training and to be playing. And he's ready for this stuff to be over. He, you know, I think he plays ball with the concert. He plays ball with the unveil. He understands who he is and what he means. But ultimately, what he wants to do is win soccer matches with Inter Miami to win League's Cup and to get out of this group for sure.
I love how John started this whole group, which was like Cruz Azul are a big club, a massive fan base in the U.S. and, you know, around the region. You put Atlanta United who have 7 of the 10 highest attendances in MLS history, who have, of course, won trophies, who have reset the standard in MLS. Tata Martino against his old team. This group has everything. And
Thiago Almada. Shall we not forget about his World Cup teammate?
Absolutely. So I think Friday night's going to be electric. I think the whole group is going to be really fun to watch. Like, even you talk about Cruz Azul going to Atlanta to finish this thing out. If Atlanta has a chance, you know, they control their own destiny. Of course, with the no ties, like, you're probably going to be alive in your one-on-one matches. That could be an incredible atmosphere and a big moment in MLS history as well. So this is going to be a lot of fun. Let's finish up the South. In the fourth group, tough to be FC Dallas and Charlotte coming behind. Wait,
I just had a flash to Messi taking penalties in League's Cup.
In a League's Cup shootout?
In each match. Oh, boy. I mean...
By the way, I'd be shocked if he made it 90 minutes, by the way.
Oh, fair point.
Or he comes off the bench.
Yeah, yeah.
It's... Oh, my God. I can't. Well, we talked about Messi at the beginning, and we will... Spoilers, talk about him a little bit more over the next 2.5 years, which is how long his contract is for. Let's hit Dallas, Charlotte, and Necaxa in this group. So Dallas hosts the first two games, and then it finishes up at Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte against Necaxa. What should we know about Necaxa coming from Liga MX?
Well, it's a team that has some American ownership, some big names behind it that kind of came together in a consortium, Eva Longoria, some athletes, all part of that group. I think Kate Upton is part of it as well. So if people are fans of her, you know, maybe she'll be watching the same League's Cup game you are. I think the Cax is an interesting team because they moved. They still have a big fan base in Mexico City from being based there for a long time. Now they're in Aguascalientes. So, you know, it's a team that has history, but has sort of split time between two different places and comes into the U.S. off a rough tournament. And I think because of the American ownership, because of the history of having won trophies, if they could go on a run here, it'd be pretty significant. I don't know. It's going to be tough, but that's the goal.
You popped for Aguascalientes.
Yeah, that was one of the places I played with Cuauhtémoc, and it was sold out crowd.
In a friendly or in a competitive match?
It was preseason. We would do a preseason tour down there. But that's where this guy showed up in a Volkswagen painted, completely covered in Club America stuff. He took off his shirt. He had a tattoo of Club America on his shoulder. On one side, he had Blanco's face on the other. And then he got him to sign his arm. He's got this long name, Cuauhtémoc Blanco, right? So super elaborate signature. He came back the next day with the tattooed.
Amazing. Necaxa, you mentioned the American ownership. That's obviously newer. I feel like in my life, they are one of the bigger teams that I see supported. Maybe that's the New York area. Am I making that up?
I think that's Maria just told me regional bias. I think that's the regional bias from you. Maybe in the Northeast, they got big supporters. But I do think that Mexico City history is pretty critical. You know, when you look at how big Mexico City is population-wise, compared to cities like Buenos Aires, London, right now there's only 3 first division teams in Mexico City. That's not a lot when you look at some of the other kind of football cities around the world. So Necaxa, having been in Mexico City, I think benefits from some of that legacy support that maybe carries over across the border for sure.
Kaylin, let's look at FC Dallas specifically. They host 2 of the games. I picked them to be, I think, 2nd or 3rd in the Western Conference. They started that way. It's faltered. But Jesus Ferreira now coming off a golden boot run at the Gold Cup. Like, is this a tournament where he can sort of, again, continue to stamp his name as, like, I am not up and coming. I'm established in this region.
But he's going to need to. And I wouldn't consider him as up and coming at this point.
Oh, he's here?
Yeah, based on what he's done, he scored 18 goals last year. I know he's young, but he's been carrying the load for his club for a long time, and they're going to need it because without him, they haven't been able to get enough out of Velasco. The other pieces haven't really been able to get goals. Camungo scoring, but that's not really somebody that they're going to be able to lean on. So him coming back in, he didn't travel or at all to the Seattle match. So is rested, now going to be itching to get back to it. But yeah, scored a ton of goals in the Gold Cup. So they're going to need it. Charlotte on the other side, really going the wrong direction, struggling with direct play, balls in behind. just lack of confidence. They are bringing in new players as well. So I think they've signed, what, 3 or 4 new players?
Yeah, they've
reportedly come through.
They've signed 2 attacking midfielders, and they are on the verge of a left back. I don't know if that one's been closed yet. Tom talked to us about it a bit.
Yes, yeah, so we talked about this show. Timing of this League's Cup where there's new additions, the window's been open. So the idea that they're going to need to be able to bring in some new pieces. I mean, Charlotte is in need of some new options.
All right. That's the South there. Let's move to the East now. We talked about Austin being one of the 2 groups that has 2 League MX teams and 1 MLS team. The other is the number 1 group in the East with the Philadelphia Union, reigning Eastern Conference champions. And they are hosting Querétaro as well as Cholos, because I didn't write this correctly, so I could not find it in there. But I got there eventually. Let's start with Cholos. Because it's an easy one, John Piojo, anytime he's involved with anything, he's going to be the first name. He is, you know, media darling. There's going to be a ton of energy, a ton of focus around him coming back to Cholos after a few years with a bunch of other clubs. What is this group under Piojo Herrera?
Well, Miguel Herrera last year after the tournament gave a really blunt press conference and said, I need players. You know, he arrived during that tournament, so he hadn't had a transfer window to work with. So it was kind of a question as to what the club would actually do. It's a team that really captured the imagination, won Liga MX, despite being a very, very young team. And as far as having existed for just a few years when they won Liga MX, had a really thrilling run in the Copa Libertadores when Mexican teams still played in that. And then just sort of stopped being relevant. You know, they sold players to other clubs. They stopped hitting on all of their imports as they had been for so many years. And now Miguel Herrera comes to kind of try and give that energy back. He is a guy who's full of energy himself. And I think their signings this year indicate that Herrera wanted more veteran leadership. They bring in Chuy Corona from Cruz Azul after more than a decade there. He's 40. He's starting in goal. Carlos Gonzalez up top is a guy who I don't think people have really kind of talked about enough. I think he's scored in every single game so far after debuting for Cholos. Just a central forward, typical, you know, good in the air. Not a poacher necessarily, but gets into the right places and scores. So I think that, you know, there's a decent veteran spine with this team. They're still a bit away from contending in Mexico, but it's a better version of Tijuana than the team that ended last season for sure.
On the other side, Querétaro didn't make the playoffs in the Clausura, but you're already laughing at my pronunciation and how poorly I did.
Well, we worked on this in the pre-show to break the fourth wall a little. We've worked on this, man. Querétaro, yeah, they didn't make the playoffs, but they deserved to, right? They made it in on standings, but because they're the team that would have gotten relegated by Liga MX's previous situation of having multiple different tournaments added together, it's always made my head hurt a bit. But they would have gone down if teams could go down. They didn't, but they don't get to make the playoffs. I think they're a team that, you know, even fans in Liga MX say, ah, Querétaro, whatever. But they have some players, and I think Mauro Gurk, the manager, has done a nice job getting them pulling in the right direction and getting them to that position they were in last year.
I noticed one name that was familiar, Camilo Sanvezo, who played it for
Vancouver fans.
Vancouver?
You have to tell them to cover their ears before you say the name.
But I think when he left there, he went to Querétaro to begin with, now returns back. Is he an addition that is supposed to play a big role here?
Yeah, he is. He's already off the mark, back opening his account. Reopening his account, I guess. I'm not sure what we're supposed to say about that, but he's scoring. And I think he's a player who, you know, if MLS fans lost track of him, has just been really consistent goal scorer in Liga MX for a long time. Querétaro, a team that I think holds him in high esteem still. He clearly wanted to go back. So it made a lot of sense, this reunion. And I definitely think we'll see him play a role. And I understand you want Vancouver fans to cover their ears. That was a long time ago, but I mean, scoring champion.
People don't forget.
Golden Boot winner.
John, people don't forget.
And you shouldn't forget him either, because he scored a ton of goals. He's done it in Mexico. He's done it in MLS. Maybe he's too controversial still to be like our League's Cup mascot. But, you know, he's a player who shows what can be done in both leagues.
Shout out to Eric Hosley and wherever he is and whatever he's doing right now. Philadelphia, of course, the third team in this group. We're, I think, going to talk a lot about them going forward because they will probably be a contender all the way through this competition. Let's move to the second group in the East. Montreal. facing off against DC United and Pumas. They host the first two games, and then we finish the group with Pumas traveling down.
Maria's going to give us more time for
against
this section,
DC.
Right?
Yeah, Maria's already chanting for Pumas. Goya, Goya. Pumas, the last time we saw them north of the border, they were playing in the CCL final last year, losing to the Seattle Sounders. John, where have they been over the last year? What's happened?
It hasn't gone well. I think they overachieved in that CCL final run and then maybe thought, hey, we mostly have our team together. They brought in Dani Alves. That didn't go well for anyone. Andres Fellini ended up making way, former Pumas manager. Now he's working on the Federation with youth projects. But Pumas did switch gears during the last tournament to bring in Antonio Mohamed, a manager who has won the title in Liga MX, multiple titles, and I think has kind of given them some stability that they need, given players confidence that maybe they should have had but didn't. And one of the big things they've reinforced this past offseason, the summer, is their defense. They signed Nathan from Brazil. Lisandro Malagan comes in. So I think you'll see a Pumas team that should, in theory, be bulked up from what they were in the previous tournament, because that CCL final, even though they lost, ended up being a real high point for the team because it really didn't go very well after.
Maria says these are 4-minute groups. We have 9 more minutes to talk about Pumas if we'd like. You mentioned some of those additions. Is there overall hope that Pumas is moving in the right direction? And if so, is that just competitive or is that to get to the America Tigres Monterrey sort of mountain?
Well, I think the expectation is to be in that group. You know, this is a grande, one of the 4 big teams, historical big teams. It's just to help everyone. It's America, Pumas, Cruz Azul, and Chivas are the 4 traditionals. Now you have the Monterrey team that spend a lot of money, both Tigres and Monterrey. So when you talk about Pumas, that is the expectation. However, because of the special relationship they have with UNAM, the biggest university in Mexico, the biggest, I think, in Latin America, because of that relationship, the budget isn't there in the same way that Tigres has, where they have a relationship with the university, but they're also backed by a big cement company. So there's not the funds that other teams have to just buy big-time South American players. And the Dani Alves deal was such a big deal because it was so different from Pumas. It didn't work. It went really terribly off-field and on. And so now I think Pumas is back in a mode where they're trying to rely, I think, on Mohamed, his character and his knowledge of the league to get things going in the right direction. So even if the expectation is maybe a little bit ambitious, I do think that Pumas is a team that's going to take several steps in the right direction simply with the experience Mohamed has and some of the quality of the additions they've made.
Yeah, it felt like a big deal to see a name like Antonio Mohamed come into this club after the titles he's won, the big clubs he's managed, including Monterrey and Cholos, and the championships he's won like all across Mexico, to take over this team. We've got Montreal and DC as well in this one. Kaylin, we previewed on the MLS season pass previews. There is a match preview for every single match coming up this week in Leagues Cup, this first stretch. Then there'll be an off day and we'll do more previews for you. So you can go to MLS season pass to watch all those and of course all the games. But Montreal, you kind of thought this could be a fun tournament for them.
Yeah, well, I was now just listening, talking about Pumas and Mohamed coming in and having to kind of reimagine this Pumas team in his own image. And if you think there's some symmetry there with Losada in Montreal and what he's done, going out and getting players, Opoku from LAFC, they gave a bunch of allocation money to get him. You already see him get his first goal. But with Bryce Duke, Lassiter, all the pieces that they've added have really started to fit more his style of play, because we've talked about it before, but Wilfred Nancy was playing much more possession-based. Mm-hmm. This is a lot more direct. And that's where I think the danger comes in for DC, is that's where they've really struggled is with direct play. They haven't been able to defend in space, turn and go. Of course, Tyler Miller, all-star team. But yeah, I mean, he's been left out to dry and then at times made mistakes himself that have put himself and his team in a bad place. So this DC team is going to be a playoff team, in my opinion. I think they're going to get there. The question I had and why I'm really intrigued to watch them in Leagues Cup is because I worry more where the risk they take over the course of a season might help you get there. But in these one-off matches where those sort of high variance, you know, the longer full season aggregate statistics no longer play in your favor, because you make one mistake like that and you're out of the tournament.
Let's go to East, a third group. It is an interesting one to go through in terms of games. So it's NYCFC, Toronto, and Atlas, which means NYCFC hosts Atlas. at Citi Field. Then they host TFC at Red Bull Arena. And then we go up to Toronto, where Atlas will finish things out against TFC. Los Zorros, the Foxes, obviously, in Guadalajara. This was the story, I think, of the year around the world, going up until, you know, World Cup and everything else for a lot of sports fans. John, in that Atlas broke a 70-year title drought. They won back-to-back tournaments. Where is this group now compared to where they were and sort of, you know, that ecstasy that they had in those moments?
It feels a bit like Atlas's ownership group and front office kind of said, hey, we did it. We broke the title drought. We won an Apertura and a Clausura, and now we're going to clean house. So this offseason has seen the departure of Julian Quiñones, who we talked about moving to America, Julio Furch on his way to Brazil, even Ociel Herrera, one of their bright young stars, maybe moving within Mexico. They've signed a few players to sort of fill the gaps, but it definitely feels a bit more speculative than certain, where Atlas knew what they were going to get out of the pairing of Furch and Quiñones. Now you have players, Emuro Aguirre, and potentially a couple new signings that you haven't seen gel together yet. Certainly, I don't think are going to have time to gel before they play NYCFC and Toronto. So this is a different Atlas team. It's not the team that won the title. It's not the team that we saw in Campeones Cup. Some key players definitely still remain, but the manager's gone. The star players are gone. It's a new era for Atlas.
We saw that at Campeones Cup last year when NYCFC, reigning champions, played against Atlas, and it was Atlas had already fallen off the cliff under Coca at the time. They'd already won their two titles, and it kind of felt like it was all coming to an end. Coca, of course, left, went to Tigres, but then very quickly to Mexico, which did not work out, losing in the Nations League semifinal and getting let go. So this feels like a big opportunity for Atlas to sort of state that they could be competitive. It also feels like a big one for TFC. Kalen, that again, a team, the season has not gone the way they'd like. They've made changes to the coach, and they've now changed the roster a ton with Latif Blessing and Franco Ibarra coming in. Like, is this a way to sort of salvage Insigne and Bernadeschi by making a run in the tournament?
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I just don't see it. It's just, you spend that type of money on players, and I don't know what's salvageable at this point for TFC. So I see it less that way than more NYCFC is where I see a little bit more of the upside of a team that is maybe going to integrate some new pieces into the roster as the next couple weeks advance. And the idea that they've probably played better than what they've gotten back as far as results. So, but yeah, it's hard for me to see any real positives or redeeming qualities or possibilities here for TFC the way the season has gone.
Interesting. I feel like they're a team that they're going to get Jonathan Osorio back from Gold Cup. They've got way more ground coverage in central midfield. At least they can create the platform for Insigne and Bernadeschi to attack of. But the fact that they would then go and win, what, 4 knockout games? That seems fairly unlikely. They might have the best player on the field, though, in every single one of those games.
It'd be a great story.
Is normally a formula for this one. Do you think they're Canada's best chance? Or do you think Vancouver and Montreal are better?
I like Vancouver's group, and I like Montreal's group, so I would take both of those options before I took Toronto.
Yeah, well, sorry, Toronto. I tried. I tried to shoehorn you into a positive conversation. Couldn't get there. Wasn't going to happen. Let's finish this out. We've made it through 14 groups with our 15th group. East number 4, the New York Red Bulls, hosting 2 games. They start with the Revs, then we travel up to Kalen's old haunts in Gillette Stadium, where the Revs will host Atletico San Luis, the third team in this group, and then we finish with the Red Bulls hosting Atletico San Luis. We already talked a little bit about Jardine, the manager for Atletico San Luis, going to America to take over there. So where does his former team stand without him?
It's kind of a succession plan, Gustavo Leal taking over. They've added some veteran players. Cata Dominguez, a center back who played with the national team with Cruz Azul, maybe familiar to people. He had a really nice game this weekend and worked together with Unai Bilbao, another veteran center back. So in a lot of ways, I think they should probably try and build on what they have at the back. Some interesting players up top too, but ultimately, Atletico San Luis is going to have that question looming over them of what can they do with a new manager. As we mentioned before, it doesn't always work. Didn't work at Puebla, hasn't worked at other Liga MX stops, but I think the continuity here could serve Atletico San Luis well. And with the roster they have, the influence from the parent club, Atletico Madrid,
and a fan base that I think is relatively demanding. I think that they've built a team that may be a little bit better than people in Mexico even give it credit for, because it's not in one of the big cities. So I think it's a team worth watching, and one that maybe will make things quite interesting in this group with Northeastern teams.
John, wanted to ask you about Mateo Klimowicz, 23-year-old Argentine, I believe German background as well, too. Came from, I think he's on loan from Stuttgart. What do you think of this addition?
I think that they needed a player who can kind of stir the drink. You know, I think last year there were times where it settled into a bit of a rhythm. And again, finding that base with the defense can sometimes mean that you're not as dynamic as you need to be, you know, getting forward. So the fact that, you know, it results in a 4-1 win, albeit over Querétaro this weekend, and with a player like Dieter Villalpando, who knows Liga MX, who's created in that league before, I think, you know, there are some options for Leal to find that dynamic attacker, to find a player who can provide a little bit of punch going forward that maybe they were missing at times last year.
One of the things we don't often see in Liga MX is like high pressing teams like a Cincinnati and a Red Bulls. What do you make of how the Liga MX teams that haven't been in a CCL, where they've seen teams from MLS consistently, are going to handle this newer competition?
The pace of play is going to be interesting, right? I think that's going to be something that everyone is going to be sort of feeling out. Maybe the officiating comes into play too. How much did they let teams kind of accelerate the game or take their foot off the gas? In the case of Atletico San Luis, Jürgen Damm is there, who can definitely give insight onto what the pace of MLS is, how hard it can be to adapt. He's one of the most interesting additions as well. So I think that, you know, certainly when you talk about a team that's as aggressive as Red Bulls, especially for some of those teams that haven't played them before, it can be quite intimidating. You would think they would prepare and prep for that. We'll see how it goes when it's actually in the line of fire.
So this means Atletico San Luis, they're going to spend a week in Foxborough and Harrison, New Jersey, your two favorite places.
I'll be in both. Yeah. I'm working these ones. So
maybe we have to sort of get like a survey going afterwards for the Atletico San Luis players of like, well, where's your favorite?
I was going to say that, you know, the groups are named in a way that I think makes sense and yet isn't very fun. So maybe we need to rename the groups after figures. I was going to give Houston or Chicago's group the Kalen Carr group, but now that this turns out to be the Carr group, yeah. I think we got to name it after him. So Atletico San Luis players will undoubtedly learn the greatness.
Absolutely. I think Atletico San Luis players are going to come off the bus with t-shirts that say C-squared and just go out there.
Presented by Bar Louie.
Everyone's wearing helmets. They don't know why, but they'll be wearing helmets. And with that, we have come to a close. I think there's going to be a lot of great performances, a lot of big stars in Leagues Cup. But the biggest one, I think we just saw the performance from John Arnold. Thank you. Fantastic work. We appreciate you gracing us with your presence. How can people follow you? How can people find you?
You can check out the newsletter, getconcacaf.substack.com. I'm still on Twitter at Arnold, John. Spell out comma, no H in John.
I subscribe to the newsletter. I love it. It's kind of the only newsletter I read. Other people who have newsletters that I subscribe to, I apologize. It's the truth.
That's but important.
It is a reality. John, thank you so much.
Stuff, man.
Enjoy Miami. Get the hat. Get the cigar going. You can unbutton your shirt now and do whatever you need to do Miami style.
Beautiful. I'll send you all photos. Appreciate it. Take care.
All right, Kalen. You still breathing?
I am. I'm still here.
15 groups.
That's a lot.
Felt good.
That was good. I mean, I feel like I just mainlined all of Liga MX because I needed that. I'm ready for Leagues Cup.
We talk about MLS After Dark and all the wildness. We talk CCL. Liga MX is a phenomenal league with a bizarre array of clubs. And I do think this is going to be a lot of fun. I am very excited. It went a little calmer than I expected. I think not having Anders, but I think not having Weeby yell about Anders timers made it all like, did you feel as stressed as the preseasons when we're like, we only have 7 minutes?
Yeah.
What are we going to do?
No, this was nice.
Yeah.
Plus it was a, you know, 3-man band. So
yeah, obviously.
Makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah. Well, thank you to everyone for watching and listening. Of course, we will not be back with a Thursday episode because we're all going to be at the MLS All-Star Game. So you can follow along, of course, on MLS Season Pass. It'll have the game. We have all of our previews that we recorded for all of the Leagues Cup matches, ourselves, as well as Shet Messing and Steve Cangelosi. So you can dig into all of that on MLS Season Pass. And do not forget to do your Leagues Cup Bracket Challenge, which is live now. You get the chance to predict the round-by-round winners of the brand-new tournament for a shot at the grand prize of $10,000. Yeah, you can make your picks anytime before the group stage begins on July 21st. That's this Friday. Learn more at leaguescup.com/bracket challenge. You did pick yours. I don't know that you're allowed to enter.
Okay.
Well, but you did announce that you picked Seattle.
Yeah. Who do you have?
And with that, we thank you all for listening. Thank you for being with us. We're excited to cover the first ever edition of this Leagues Cup and to watch the favorites. I don't even know who I was going to say. I was going to try and pull a team right out at the RSL? Last moment, and I couldn't think of what the favorites. RSL marched their way to I would love for the final to be in Salt Lake City. I was in Salt Lake City for what was the old version of Leagues Cup.
So it's one of the two coming out of this group. We're in the same group. Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah, they're with Seattle.
Yeah, we're in the same group.
Yeah, so that's a good idea for us. We really spread our options out pretty wide. Thank you to Maria for all she's doing, for all she did for us here today. Thank you to all of you for listening. Have a great week and happy Leagues Cupping.